Intervju Radija Študent.
Throughout history, many famous pregnancies have occurred. Demi Moore, Princess Diana, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger?
It's impossible, it's not natural, and I'm not interested.
I took you for a scientist.
I am a scientist.
Yeah? Well, where's your vision? Opportunity's knocking here.
You're just trying to manipulate me.
Yes, I am. So what? We're on the verge of something fantastic, and I need you to carry it through with me.
What's going on?
Can you keep an open mind? I mean, really wide open.
Let's put a bun in your oven.
I must be crazy to be doing this.
You may be crazy, but you're also pregnant.
I'm pregnant.
I've got you under my skin.
Strašno in vznemirljivo hkrati. Vse je mogoče. Tudi najbolj fantastične filmske zgodbe počasi, a vztrajno postajajo del otipljive realnosti. V sredini septembra je po 13 letih intenzivnih priprav na Švedskem zdravstvena ekipa, v kateri je sodelovalo več kot 10 kirurgov in drugih zdravnikov ter specialistov, opravila prvo presaditev maternice pacientkama, ki sta jima maternico darovali lastni materi. Ena od pacientk se je že rodila brez maternice, drugi pa so ji jo zaradi raka na materničnem vratu odstranili. Sicer gre za tretji in četrti primer presaditve človeške maternice na svetu. Prva se je zgodila leta 2000 v Saudski Arabiji, druga lani v Turčiji. Posebna pa je zato, ker sta maternici darovali še živeči osebi. Donor ni bil mrtvi darovalec organov. Po letu dni, če v mestnem času ne pride do kakih komplikacij, kot je na primer zavrnitev transplanta, bodo bolnici umetno oplodili. Pogovarjamo se z doktorjem Janušem Marcickijevičem, ginekološkim kirurgom in starejšim svetovalcem v regionalnem onkološkem centru na Jetenburški univerzi, ki je eden od strokovnjakov vključenih v omenjen podvig.
Maybe our first question, my first question would be, how are the patients, the recipients of the uterus transplants doing?
They are doing very well. The donors have already left the hospital last week after just a few days at the ward. The recipients are still at the ward and there's no surgical problems, but we would like to know that the rejection reaction is under control. And as until now, everything is going well.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe and the method?
They are leaving the hospital tomorrow.
Great. They're going home already.
Yeah, they're going home already, and then we just follow them with regular blood checks just to see that the transplant is doing well as well.
All right. So your case of the uterus transplantation is kind of like a success in that field, since you have been able to transplant the uterus from the donor, which has a similar genetical material, that means mother to daughter. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. The reason why we choose to transplant not from deceased donor but from living donor, and we choose the mother, is not only because they are genetically reasonable, but because we can then check the uterus and have the other factors before transplanting, just to know that the donor is not harboring HPV infection and something like that. So this uterus has already proven to be able to harbor the pregnancy. And we have the time to make all check and all examination we need to know that uterus is in the perfect condition. To tell the truth, we performed two transplantations. We are going to perform 6 more next year and 2 more this year. So 2 more is going. to come in October and 6 transplantation next year. And in this group of 8 transplantation we are planning to do, they will have different settings, not only mothers, but even sister, a friend, and a mother-in-law, and a relative. But most of them are mothers, yes.
So is it difficult to get donors who don't come from families?
Yes, there are even other donors available. Every patient who became in contact with us has had her own donor. Sometimes it's mother, most often it's mother, but sometimes it's sister who had already got 4 children and underwent sterilization. So she was ready for donation. And in some other cases was the friend or relative or, friend's relative, mother-in-law even.
So can you explain in more detail why have you chosen to take the uterus from a living donor, not from a corpse?
Yeah, first of all, there is a shortage of multiple organ donors in Sweden, the first thing. The second is then with a deceased donor, we have not enough time to perform all these tests we would like to have done on the uterus to be sure that the uterus can harbor the pregnancy and the uterus is doesn't have any infection like HPV, for example, which can lead to the cervical cancer in the recipient. So we would like to develop the technique to transplant from the living donor. But there are other groups, like in Turkey last year, it was performed an operation on deceased donor and Rokitansky-Meyer-Kistner girl has got this uterus. And as until now, everything is going well, even in Turkey. So we hope, we cross our fingers and we hope that the patient in Turkey is going to do well as our patient. But it was slightly different technique. The technique is I cannot say it's much easier, but a little easier to dissect the vessels of the uterus, because we have to be very, very careful not to damage the vessels in the donor, donor, because the donor is, as we talk about, living donor. The donor has to survive the surgery without any sexual, without any consequences. With the deceased donor, we don't have to think about it. So you can take longer vessels and bigger vessels just to make the transplantation easier. But everything has positive and negative sides, and that's why we decided to go for living donor only.
You mentioned the Turkey case, which happened, that is the uterus transplant.
Last year in August.
But I read that they don't expect the recipient of the uterus to get pregnant. In your cases, the projection for the future is different.
No. So it would be not used to transplant the uterus if you are not aiming on the pregnancy. The pregnancy is the only reason to transplant the uterus. Otherwise, it's absolutely meaningless.
I understand.
Uterus has no function for the body of the actual woman. Uterus is very, very important. Otherwise, we haven't talked if the uterus haven't been on place. But uterus has only one task. It's just to harbor the pregnancy. So even in Turkey, they are aiming to make the patient pregnant, and they, as we, have already got embryos, frozen embryos.
All right, but
all our patients have frozen embryos, at least 10 frozen embryos, before we transplant the uterus, because we have to know that they can get pregnant. Otherwise, it would be meaningless to transplant the uterus, to expose them for the very big and extensive surgery, and then discover that they cannot get pregnant, they cannot produce eggs which can be fertilized with the husband's sperm.
Mm-hmm. But if I understand correctly, these procedures are still part of clinical research, not clinical standards. So you don't
definitely not clinical standards.
Mm-hmm. So you don't you're still researching the field. You don't know what the outcome will be.
Exactly, and that's why we ask for permission. Our ethical committee at Gothenburg University, we ask for permission to perform 10 transplantations. And we have already done two. We are going to perform two more in October, in just a few weeks' time, and take six next year. And then we stop and we observe our 10 patients during 1 year, because we need at least 1 year before we know that the rejection reaction is under control. After 1 year, we are going to make them pregnant with those frozen embryos we have already got.
Mm-hmm. I've read some literature and a lot of historical work in uterus transplantation or in transplantations of the sex organs in general has been done monitoring the reaction or the influence of the immunosuppressants on the fetus and on the mother. Have you got the immunosuppressants reaction under control? Can you project if any damage will come from the combination of the drugs used?
Okay, we use the same combination of drugs as is used for a transplanted heart or kidney, mm-hmm, or lungs, and there is 15,000 children born in the world after the transplantation and after immunosuppression during the pregnancy. It means all these women with kidney transplant, heart transplant, lung transplant, or intestinal transplants. So there are a lot of women. We have a lot of data regarding pregnancy and immunosuppression. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, we see that there is absolutely no increased risk for malformations, but there is slightly increased risk for preeclampsia. Mm-hmm. And for small for gestation, for growth retardation. Mm-hmm. But there is one study based on 3,500 women who gave born to the children before and after transplantation. And in this study, they have exactly the same risk for small for gestation, for growth retardation and preeclampsia, both before the transplantation and after the transplantation. So most truly, it's not immunosuppression and transplantation itself which slightly rises the risk for preeclampsia, but the illness which led to the transplantation. So we have a lot of data about it, and we perform ourselves transplant in rodents. And then we have no, and with immunosuppression, and then we have no malformation at all. But as I told you, 15,000 children born in the world after transplant, after not uterus transplant, of course, but other transplants and immunosuppression.
Mm-hmm. So the reason for the possibility or the considering of uterus transplantation is the remnant of the infertility problems which are in the world and haven't yet been addressed. Can you please describe for our listeners which kind of women are candidates for this kind of transplantation?
The big group which can be candidate for uterus transplantation are women with so-called Rokitansky Rokitansky-Meyer-Kirchner syndrome. Mm-hmm. It means women who are born without vagina and without uterus. One in every 4,000 is born in this way. So if you think that in Sweden, it's about 25-30 girls every single year born without vagina, without uterus. And we can create neovagina, making them, making vagina functional for sexual purposes. But unfortunately, these women have no chance to be mothers otherwise than by uterus transplantation, because they have no uterus which can harbor the pregnancy. This is the big group of women. The another group are all those women who we perform hysterectomy, who lost their uterus either because of cervical cancer, which comes most often in the years of 35, 50, 40 years, so it's still fertile women. If they have no children before, then they have no chance to be pregnant after the uterus is removed. And the uterus can be removed even because of huge bleedings after the pregnancy, after the delivery, or during the delivery, or during the cesarean section. So all women who have no uterus are candidates for uterus transplantation, and there is the only chance for them to get pregnant. The other option for them would be adoption or surrogacy. Mm-hmm. But surrogacy is not legal in Sweden, and most of the countries in the world is not legal either. So there's just a few countries where surrogacy is legal.
So about the procedure, I understand it's quite kind of invasive, kind of risky. Can you describe it? Most of it is centered around the revascularization of the uterus. But if I understand, the pregnant mother with a uterus transplantation wouldn't be able to feel contractions or her child kicking.
We don't know that. Mm-hmm. We don't know that, because nobody has become pregnant after the uterus transplantation before in the world. So we don't know that. Mm-hmm. We can anticipate that when we transplant the uterus, we cannot transplant the nerve tissue, mm-hmm. and that's why maybe the sensation from the uterus can be slightly different. We plan to deliver all these women by cesarean section, because we don't want to risk the normal delivery. But in mice, when we transplanted uterus, we never transplant the nerve tissue either. But in mice, the delivery started exactly as in the normal uterus, is the native uterus, even in the transplanted uterus, with the perfect contraction, with the perfect delivery. So we from the very beginning, we performed cesarean section on our mice who became pregnant after uterus transplantation, but we stopped doing that because they delivered offsprings absolutely perfect without any difficulties, like in native, like in normal uterus. So in mice, the transplanted uterus worked exactly as normal uterus. So we don't really know how the sensation from the transplanted uterus would be observed in the in women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I understand. Can we talk about the possibilities of the future of uterus transplantation when this procedure has become a standard procedure? It probably will, as it shows you have good results up to this point. I know there's an ethics agreement, a Montreal ethics agreement, about who is the possible recipient and donor, and what kind of qualities a medical team must have for a possibility of transplantation. Does this mean that in the future maybe transgender women would also be able to carry the pregnancy of the child?
We haven't addressed that question. It's a very difficult ethical problem, and I don't think we are I think it's quite too early to discuss. I don't think it would be allowed in Sweden. I don't think it would be allowed most of other countries, but they are ethical questions which are going to pop up after if we succeed with our project. I must say that our project is absolutely outside the normal welfare in Sweden. We perform our operation on Saturday and Sunday in our off time, and all costs are taken by private sponsors and scientific foundations. So we are not competing in any way with the normal standard welfare here in Sweden. So the hospital is just letting us using the operation theater, which is normally closed on Saturday and Sunday. So there is no costs light on the hospitals. Mm-hmm. In this case. But after these 10 cases, then it's up to the political, our politicians, to decide if it can be used in the as a standard procedure or not, if we have... And then I think all this ethical question has to be addressed, because I cannot answer this question. This question are discussed in the not only the government but in the Swedish Parliament, and then they decide which way we should go.
But you will publish some results from this.
Of course, we would publish results showing if it is possible or not. And then if we show that it is possible, it's working well, then it's up to politicians to decide if it should be included in the standard treatment of infertility or not. Mm-hmm. Because our politicians decided that infertility is an illness and all illness should be treated. And we discover more and more ways to treat infertility. In the 70s, there was a big discussion about in vitro fertilization. Now it's a standard procedure. Nobody raises the brow because of in vitro fertilization. A lot of children is born in this way. But just 20 years ago, it was still ethical discussable. And in different countries, the regulation is very different. There are still countries like Italy, which doesn't allow frozen embryos, for mm-hmm. example, which make the in vitro fertilization much more difficult in Italy than in other countries. So it's up to politicians, up to the single countries to decide if it can be used or not.
I understand the questions concerning in vitro fertilization when it was a new procedure were quite similar than to the questions which are raising now.
Exactly.
But have you, did you, I know a great group of specialists were present in these two uterus transplantations. Was there a major psychological evaluation involved in discussing if the donors and recipients are a good candidate?
Absolutely. At first, we have a lot of women wanting to underwent the transplantation, and we have by ourselves chosen some candidates who in our opinion would be giving us the best chance to succeed. And then every woman, every recipient of the donor underwent not only medical examination, but by different doctors and consulting by different doctors, two gynecologists, two transplant surgeons, mm-hmm. one internal medicine, and then they have even have the contact with psychologists, or at least twice, before we decided, because we want to give as objective information both to recipient and donor as possible. So it was not only us who would meet recipient and donors. There are a lot of other people included, who are not in our team. So they have no interest in the project in this way. Mm-hmm. They just evaluate their psychological status of the recipient and donor, and both recipient and donor have the possibility to meet psychologists many times before we decide and before they decided. So it was very, 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 very important for us to make it this way.
Mm-hmm. Maybe for the last question, Dr. Martickiewicz, I would ask if you said there's going to be 8 more transplantations in the future. Will you be creating different environments, maybe different procedures for each and every one of these patients? Or are you repeating these 2 procedures which happened now and you just want to make a quantitative research?
No, we are not going to use different approaches. We are going to use the same approach and the same team during all 10 transplantations. But as with the surgery, there is no exactly the same surgery you can perform on different individuals, because the anatomy is slightly different, the vessels are slightly different. We have to improvise during the operation. But we try to make it as standardized and possible. So we cannot use different techniques in every patient. We have to think about that in patients after when the uterus is removed because of cervical cancer, the situation in the abdomen is quite different than in patients who has lack of the uterus from the very beginning. So we have to adopt the procedure according to the situation in the abdomen of the recipient and according to the situation in the abdomen of the donor, because they are quite different vessels. We sometimes can use vessels, even ovarian vessels, not only uterine veins, but it depends on how it is looked like. But we try to make it as standardized and as possible.
Dr. Martickiewicz, I would like to congratulate you on your feat. Of course, the congratulations goes out to you and to your colleagues. I hope you have a lot of successes in the future. I hope the mothers, future mothers, will be well. And thank you for the interview.
Thank you very much. And I'm really impressed how you spell out my surname, because it's quite difficult.
Interview je pripravila Polona.
Intervju Radija Študent.